The Final Play Podcast would like to welcome you to the following presentation of the National Rugby League.
You just don't think of Jimi Hendrix playing. You just think of Hulk Hogan playing.
Coming out like this.
That's all you do. You just think. I'm just thinking of Hulk Hogan playing the guitar. Playing the WCW Heavyweight Championship with NWO spray painted on it. That's what I picture him.
Well, this was really
not even with the NWO music. Like, that's the NWO music, but that's what I picture him playing.
You don't picture Sam Walker for that song, clearly not. No, I don't either, but that's why I picked this song. That's the only reason I picked the song. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play Podcast. Every week's NRL week, obviously, because we're thick and fast in the NRL. So all things NRL today. Couple of news, I guess, brief sort of news before we get into the games. First one, Trent Merrin has decided to retire, pretty much effective immediately.
Yeah, that's I guess that caught a lot of people by surprise. He's basically just come out and said that he can no longer sort of keep up with the speed of the game. It's basically I think in his own words, evolved past him. So, yeah.
he's
the last remaining player on that Dragons premiership side. Obviously, he played at the Panthers for a little while, and then he was over at the Super League he was over there for a few years before he actually came back home. Before he came back to the Dragons. So, he's done it all. He's won a premiership. He's represented his country 7 times. He's played Origin 13 times. He's a warrior. All of these accomplishments, obviously, when he was a much younger man. He still killed it while he was over in the Super League. Still had a thirst for the game. That's why he came back to the NRL.
And that's why the Dragons took him as well.
Absolutely. Sentimental.
For sure.
Value, really.
And I thought it was pretty selfish of him as well, to basically go to Anthony Griffin and say he told him to give his pay and his position to a younger player because he couldn't keep up with the game. So he ended up being pretty selfless for the Dragons. So they're going to have that money sort of free up, which is great. I mean, effectively, once you retire, that cash becomes free. But, yeah, I thought that was pretty – I mean, look, at the end of the day, he's going home to Sally Fitzgibbon, so I'm pretty sure he's going to be okay.
he's going to be just fine, everybody. Let's not get too crazy here. Like, he's only 31. So, you know, for him to sort of come out and admit I hope this isn't going to become a worrying trend that guys he's only 31. Guys of his age, he's not a middle forward. You know, he's an edge forward, but have basically he's come out and just said that this game, it's too fast now. It's too fast.
So, and that's like you just said,
I just hope that's not a trend. Hope it's not.
I kind of think it is going to be. I think this is going to. I'm not going to say it's going to be like a floodgate of people, but I think it's going to be the start of a trend of your older ones. But it'll be the interesting when the younger ones, you know, I get under 30s coming out that are just too big, and then just know that they can't keep up because they're physically too big. That's when you'll notice. But
yeah, and that's what I mean. I've sort of said it before. You know, rugby league's a game for all shapes and sizes. So I just don't like that the emphasis now in the game is only on the small skillful players. Like it's a 13 man game. There's 13 guys on the field. Every person is just as important as the other.
I agree.
It's not just your glamour positions. It's not like the it's I mean it, it's not
it's,
as it's not as bad as the NFL, where it's a very much quarterback-driven league and everybody is expendable. But the NRL is very slowly going that way, that those glamour slash skill positions. And they're obviously, and don't get me wrong, like, you know, they're the fuel, that they're the ones that you get the job done. They're your guys. That your skill positions are what they are. And
I know, but I agree with you.
You know what I mean?
Well.
But you still got to have forwards. You still got to have your edge forwards. You still got to have your wingers, and so you've got to have everybody.
And you still got to, and you still should pay them as well, because I mean, you look at, I mean, I know we're digressing in the NFL, but your left tackles get paid a pretty handsome sum because they're protecting the quarterback, and the edge players, you know, defensive ends are getting paid bucket loads as well. So yes, every position should and.
They're all an integral part.
I agree.
That fuels the that is, you know, a rugby league slash, you know, an NFL football side. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone is just as important as the other, because if you don't have, I'll say it until, you know, till the day I die, that if you don't have forwards in front of you that are laying a good platform, it doesn't matter whether you're Jonathan Thurston, whether you're Darren Lockyer, whether you're Joey Johns. It simply does not matter. If you cannot have the time and space in front of you that's created by the platform of a good forward pack, then your skill set becomes extremely diminished.
Yep, totally agree. Other quick news is next year's one game of next year's State of Origin is going back to Perth in 2022, which, I mean, it's good for New South Wales because that's where we had a good win there. But
it was raining too that day, wasn't it?
It was raining. Remember, and Trbojevic come out and just had a blinder. Remember?
Oh, don't get me started.
Because it was bucketing rain.
And the skill. That's what I mean. The handling by New South Wales was unbelievable in
that
game.
That's right. We had a big win, but that's why
Trbojevic is picking up passes that are a meter in front of him. He's picking passes up that are
kicks out of the air, which is ridiculous. Yeah.
That game was pure insanity. Like, that was just one of those culmination games where everything just went right and everything stuck, and it didn't matter whether it was raining or not, it simply didn't matter, and Queensland kind of had no chance. But
well, they got nearly 60.
It's game two next year, which is look, I don't know what your sort of thoughts are on that. You know, taking, I don't mind them taking the A game away from, you know, it stops the bickering of each state going, you had two games last year, we should get two games this year. So I like it in that sort of aspect. But what would you prefer? Would you prefer the opener as a neutral site or game three as a neutral site? So if it does go to a decider, then you have essentially a neutral crowd rather than, you know, say if it's in Brisbane, like would rather have game three in their home stadium. Absolutely. But as a, if you're a State of Origin is for the fair weather fans, there's obviously, that's what the NRL is trying to attract. They're always going to get the passionate Queensland and New South Wales fans. Always.
Correct.
Like that's just a given, but they're trying to appeal to new fans of the game.
Yep.
And trying to get them involved.
I think this is great idea of doing the one game New South Wales, one game Queensland, one game neutral. That's fine. I like it. Yeah. Where to put that?
That's right. It's where to put it.
I think you sort of made the evidence and you sort of said it straight away. I think it has to be the third game, doesn't it?
I honestly think it does, because if it does go to a decider,
nine times out of ten it goes to a decider.
That's
like, really,
right, because you're always going to get a sellout at Suncorp, right? Doesn't matter whether it's a decider, whether it's game one, whether it's game two, it doesn't matter. You should be getting a sellout in Sydney, and it's getting a little bit more sort of popular now that they're not just being railroaded by Queensland every year. You know, you should be getting close to, you know, 70 plus thousand out there at the Olympic Stadium, for whatever game it would be, game one or game two. But I think it's the interest factor of trying to grow the game in a neutral site. And if it doesn't go to a decider, well, okay, fair enough. But that's, do you know what I mean? Like, I think that's just a more appealing to try and grow the game. That's all.
There'll be the things, sticking points of like, oh no, if we win, we want to celebrate in front of our fans, and they'll.
Oh, absolutely. That's right. That's right. You want to lift the shield in front of your home fans. But what happens? What happens if it's vice versa? What happens if it's lifting the shield?
Yeah.
I think the opposition stadium.
I think neutral is better because then there's no really, it just comes down to the players. It doesn't come down to the fans, depending on your travels, of course. I think it's a good idea, personally. They won't
then it comes down to the skill factor. You know, obviously that
it's been the first before. It has been the first.
I think that's right. Year
was the first, I believe.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I think it was Suncorp was the third one, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah. But, yeah, look, well done, Perth. I think they deserved another game. I mean, they got nearly 60,000, and it was torrential rain. It looked like torrential rain. So, definitely.
They're trying to drum up business for the new Optus Stadium. So, you know, that's what they're trying to do.
We'll move on to the games for round six. The first game was, like always, a Thursday game. The Broncos going down to Panthers at home, 20-12.
Brisbane were the better team for 72 minutes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because that's what it looked like.
That was stunning. That was absolutely stunning by Brisbane. That was just nobody saw that coming. It was just, and that's the kind of game that Brisbane can produce. And that's the thing. That's the kind of effort and game that if they're on, and apparently Kevy gave them an absolute just working over in the dressing room before the game. So, you know, whether or not that sort of fired everybody up to give it their all. But there was a few sort of interesting tactical ploys in this game that I think worked but didn't work all the time. I don't know if you sort of, what you sort of think about.
For Brisbane, are you talking about?
For Brisbane. Yeah. So they essentially cut off half the field with their kicking game, and I don't think they kicked a Charlie Staines once.
No, not Brian once. Toto. They targeted.
He earned his paycheck on Thursday night.
They specifically said, I remember listening to the post-press conference, or it might have been the pre, but they were targeting Brian Toto, or it must have been in training, maybe. They were targeting Brian Toto the entire game because they wanted to tire him out so he didn't do his, you know, regular 200-plus meters that he's been running, even though he still did over 272 meters. And he is a bit shaky after the high ball. But
yeah, that's right.
It didn't make a difference because he was, like you just said, he earned every bit of his paycheck. He was brilliant. There were some sketchy times, but and it was a good ploy. I mean, it clearly worked for the 72 minutes, like you just said. But it was an interesting tactic because I thought you'd go the other way. Charlie Staines is still pretty new to the game, but
exactly. Charlie Staines has played 10-12 first grade games.
Hmm?
Maybe you would be more inclined to get a mistake out of him under the high ball rather than totally working over Toto. The other thing that I sort of seen that was very clear in that first half, not so much in the second half, was the kick chase that went to Brian Toto. And I'm talking about one Tevita Pangai Jr. So every time that they kicked to that side, he would be screaming down the field at 1,000 miles an hour to try and put pressure on him. Yeah. And it worked for the Brisbane first try. Like, he dropped it. It was picked up by Brisbane, offloaded to Pangai Jr., and he had a clear run to the try line. My sort of, not so much issue with it, my sort of question marks around that was like, that is a lot of energy for him to be wasting.
Yeah.
Chasing the ball as hard as humanly possible as a big man can do, because you're taking away the effectiveness of him. So Carrigan and Lodge both had 8 hit-ups in the first half. Payne Haas, who's just, man, that he's got a motor on him. Good grief, he's got a motor on him. He had 11 hit-ups in the first half. Pengai Jr. had 6 hit-ups in the first half, but he didn't have a hit-up for the last 21 minutes of the half.
Because he was gassed.
You could clearly see him in the line of attack.
Yeah.
Just sucking in the big ones.
Yeah.
And just waiting for that kick chase. And as soon as that kick went up,
I still cannot believe he played 80 minutes.
No, and that's putting so much pressure on him.
Yeah. That's
because he come up with a few crucial mistakes in the second half. One where he's dropped the ball, just stone cold, just dropped it on the ground. Another one where he's tried the hit and spin pass, and he's hit the line of defense, spun, and tried to offload the ball too quick, and the ball's gone over the top of Momorowski's head. Simple little things. Brisbane had so many opportunities in that game to try and put Penrith away, and they couldn't do it.
I get why he did it. But if he was doing it, you can't put a guy that big, massive. He cannot play 80 minutes. You've got someone. I'm surprised he still is getting small minutes. Thomas Flegler. I reckon they could have used him a bit more. I think he's good. I like him.
Look, man, they dumped Jordan Rickey back on the bench. Like it was just.
Yeah, so what? Yeah, he didn't need to play 80 minutes to beat a Pangai Junior. I don't get why he did. Payne Huskett. Payne Haas played 63. He looks like he could play, like you just said, 80 minutes easily just, and then still walk off or jog off. But you're right. It was a couple of weird tactics. I mean, but again, we said it before. It worked for the most part up until Nathan Cleary sort of took over in that last 10 minutes. And that's exactly what happened, really.
That's right, yeah. Then it turned in. That's mean it turned into the Nathan Cleary show then, didn't it?
Yeah, well, that two-pointer, which, again...
The two-point field goal.
I like it.
You're like, all right, here we go.
And it's good. I like it. I like the two-pointer.
No, we're seeing two good exponents of it at the moment in Adam Reynolds and Nathan Cleary. So
when I pick the scores, I have to now do look at points by 2 or by 8 now, because I just you keep your 6 and all that, and then sometimes you just can't look at 6 and 12 anymore. I mean, you not that you always do, but that
last try by Cleary,
yeah,
and Luai just took on the line, seen what was in front of him, slipped through, yeah, passed it off to Cleary, and basically went in under the sticks, and that was, you know, that was just. So yeah, it was good to watch. All credit to Brisbane, like they absolutely come out firing, and you hope that can continue on in the weeks to come. That sort of effort.
I think it can. What did you think of? I mean, we'll talk about it later, but the contrary conduct charge against Momorowski. I'm sure we'll talk about it later.
Look, I guess I don't think there's a whole lot to sort of go into it. He's been suspended. Mm-hmm. So he got three weeks for that. Probably a little bit much. It didn't even warrant a penalty throughout the game.
That's what
he's
collected
Dearden high, maybe not so much late.
Yeah.
But in saying that he's collected him high, it's bumped off the side of his shoulder and you know, sort of hooked him around the head. So I don't really buy. Yeah, that's. I don't really buy into how much it sort of damaged Dearden. But yeah, a little bit high, not so much late. But yeah, I think the punishment for it is a little harsh.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, we'll touch on it a little probably later. But yeah, we'll probably won't now. I thought it was the same thing. It didn't warrant a penalty. But not that it needs to. I just think the penalty was too harsh. So
that's the thing. It's all about protecting the kicker now, whether it's late and or high. It should have been a penalty.
It should have been a penalty.
It should have been a penalty because that's what they're trying to do. You know, they're trying to disrupt the kicker, but there's got to be a line drawn in the sand on what's, you know, what's acceptable and what's not. In regards to hits, whether them being high and, as I said, and or late, on a defenseless kicker.
Next game was the Knights versus the Sharks. Knights getting over the Sharks 26-22. Pretty much, I mean, yeah, bang on by the Kalen Ponga brilliance right at the end there.
This was a belter.
Yeah, it was.
This was an absolute belter.
Yeah. It from both teams. Not just the Knights, obviously.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. By both teams. Like, it just... Kalen Ponga, like, he's been 2 weeks back now. Apparently, he was crook before the game. He was seen vomiting on the field.
Yeah.
And still putting in this sort of performance. And, you know, we said it at the start of the year. This is a put-up or shut-up year for Kalen Ponga. Now, he's been out for a while now, so you could probably, I think you could rule him out for the Dally M because he's just missed too much football. But if he keeps putting performances like this on, he'll be there or thereabouts at the end of the season.
Oh, he will be. I'm going to say it now. He's my stud of the week, but I'll touch on later why. I've got a question to pose to you. Yeah, he's my stud of the week. But I got a question to pose it to you just about.
I think that was a pretty easy one.
I think so. I mean, it was fairly easy. But there's a question I really want to pose to you when we come up to the studs and duds, and it's an interesting question. I just want to gauge what you think about it. Look, Newcastle. What do you think? I picked against them purely because I thought. I shouldn't have undermined Blake Green, really, and that's what I think I end up doing, undermining Blake Green, just because I thought Mitchell Pearce was a big
it's simplifying the game, and I think that's what Newcastle has to do, just sort of dumb things, not so much dumb, but sort of just scale things back a little bit, but it's also the fact of Kalen Ponga being back.
So
you can run different plays, you can run different things, and it doesn't have to go through the halfback. So you can have Kurt Mann, who's a good runner of the ball. You can have Blake Green, who's got a good controlling kicking game. He hasn't got the biggest boot on him in the world, but he's a good controlling halfback. And then you have that X factor in Kalen Ponga. And I think that obviously in this game it proved to be the difference.
I should have really went
his
Newcastle
goal kicking
Knights
at the
because,
moment stinks though. Oh
yeah,
God,
yeah, his kicking.
Holy
does
moly! Fight. Yeah, he needs to. Whether that come down to him being a little bit, under the weather throughout this game, but woof,
fatigue. Yeah, that's it. Sort of looked a bit fatigued, but I really should have went Newcastle because when was the last time? I am gonna have a go at him, but. How many games did Josh Hannay win before, at the end of the last year for the Cowboys? I really should have realized that he can't win many first game. Well, that's what I mean. I really should have thought about it. So,
look, you're right. They were a club in a little bit of, turmoil, I guess.
Sharks at the moment?
They didn't have Wade Graham. They didn't have Josh Dugan in this game. So, they're without two stars of the side. So, it just... As the game kept going, though, in that second half, you could see Cronulla was starting to sort of wrestle a little bit of momentum back in it and totally got themselves back in the game. And it's just like this is going to come down to the wire. And then it just like for the last Kalen Ponga try, what was it 2 minutes to go, 3 minutes to go, just the wildest fifth tackle, like the Blake Green kick that it's an absolute shocker. It goes backwards. And then it's just a mad scramble for the ball. The ball's kept alive. Tyson Frizzell gets it, spots the tiniest little gap in the line of defense, pokes his head through, and then gives a beautiful flick back onto Kalen Ponga. And he still had a little bit of work to do to get to the try line. It wasn't a clear path, but for it to end that way was unbelievable. Like, especially, Newcastle were down 22-20 at that point. So, for them to sort of in, as they say, the championship minutes, for them to come through under pressure like that was excellent. And that's what Adam O'Brien would have been looking for after, their pretty abysmal performance last week.
Last week, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Against Gold Coast, I think that was pretty that was pretty poor effort, and Adam O'Brien sort of voiced that, and you could see that in the halftime video shots against the Gold Coast there. But this was a much better effort by Newcastle, and it's going to have to be this kind of effort.
Going to have to be
for the foreseeable future with Pierce being gone for at least another 2 months or so.
Yeah, it's going to have to be. They're very lucky Blake Green sort of came back when he did come back. So
can they not squeeze our boy in on the bench somehow? Can they not squeeze our boy in?
No, isn't he out or injured? I thought he was out.
I think he's got a hamstring strain. But
something happened last week because he had to come back out.
He had a hamstring twinge.
He had to come back because Pierce was injured. I remember.
A little bit of a niggle, but. When he's back, we've got to find a spot for our boy. Yeah, like Brody Jones did awesome.
Yeah, he did.
I'm pretty sure that was his first grade debut, right, Brody Jones?
Yeah.
Pretty sure that was his first grade debut. So, look, they've got that. Yeah, they've also got Heimel Hunt went down early in that game, and I think he's gone for a couple of weeks. So I think Brody Jones has actually been named to play on the wing. This week, so that was an absolute cracker of a game. There was a few beauties.
Next game, both games were crackers. I mean, I know it was my team, Melbourne beating the Roosters 20-4, but it was a cracking game nevertheless.
Holy mackerel! The Storm and the Roosters. Like, just went out there and they just went, look, let's just go and beat the absolute living shit out of each other.
Correct.
Like, that was so intense, so physical. Like, it didn't have anything to, like, the completion rates by both teams were not terrific. But, even Melbourne, I think they still completed over 80%. But
they did,
But that was just pure force that. These weren't unforced errors, like just simple drops in the line of defense or anything like that. They beat the ball out of the Roosters, and it went both ways.
Yeah, because Melbourne come away with 3 HIAs in that game, so and the Roosters won. So yeah, they come back the other way too. Exactly like you just said. Melbourne, while it didn't look like it, I thought they really won the game just because they looked more disciplined. It didn't look like it in the penalty count, so it's hard to go off the penalty count, but they just seemed more disciplined. And that could probably come back to the young halves, like in Hutchinson and Walker, possibly. But, in that big-time games. But it does. That's how it sort of came across to me in the entire game, really.
Look, the only real difference, I guess, if you look at it, is the large amounts of missed tackles that the Roosters made. Mm-hmm. I think it was 50 plus, which is not good. A lot of errors, and even by both squads, but that was just by brute force that these two teams just came out and it was like they just had an absolute unbelievable disdain for each other as football clubs, and let's just go out there and see. See who's gonna blink first. Let's just go out there and just hammer each other.
There's not even no rivalry with them. Technically, our rivals, even if you really want to look at it, if you go back, is Manly. But God, I think it's going this way lately. I mean, the last couple of games. So.
And that's they played in the biggest game of the year. You know, they played semi-final games against each other, and they're the big draws. That's that's the big pressure moments.
Jerome Hughes for Melbourne had a great game. He did what I've been saying. All he needs to do, and that was just attack the line, and he did because he got that one try off a line break. But I think he made 2 line breaks. So that's all he needs to do. He's a pretty stocky small guy. That's all he needs to do. He's good when he attacks a line because he's got a decent kick after it as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I think he was. I guess he was not so much forced into it. You know, obviously Pappenhausen went off for his HIA, which was just brutal for fantasy points. But he ended up coming back and still scored pretty good. So, but he's out this week, which is I've had to go clutching and digging around the scrap heap for a backup fullback for this week. So, but anyway, look, I think it was just sort of thrust into that because of, like I said, with Pappenhausen sort of going down for a little while and the little bit of the slap to the face by Victor Radley on Cameron Munster, who milked it beautifully. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Milked it just to a T. That was unbelievable.
Like, Radley got off for that, so that...
That is just that is 100% not worth 10 minutes in the bin. It's not worth 10 minutes in the bin.
No, it's not. No.
It didn't look dramatic. Nothing.
No, the one we'll probably talk about later definitely, I think, deserved the send off, but I'm sure we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we'll get to that one a bit later. Radley got off from the judiciary. It wasn't even worth. It's a penalty, and that's it. When he got sent to for 10 in the bin, I just laughed. So you got to be effing kidding me.
Yeah.
That's just not 10 in the bin. It's just not.
It's anything around the head. They don't care.
Right. But it's a penalty.
Yeah. No, I know. But
it's not 10 in the bin, and everybody sort of come out and said that that Melbourne has sort of milked the HIA rule a little bit in this game and it's whether or not it's taken a little bit of time for teams to sort of figure this out, but it's just one of those things that happen where that's the way that it's that teams, I'm not saying Melbourne, I'm saying teams are going to be able to exploit the HIA. And all you've got to do is it just worked out perfectly for them. You run the risk. Run the risk. If you get up out of the tackle after you've been hit in the head or whatever, and you've got a little bit of the wobbly boot on, and but you still got all your faculties about you, and you're not sort of wandering around like you're Martin Lang, like, do you know what I mean? If you have a little bit of Martin Lang syndrome, as we like to say. It was perfect. Just the way that the rotation of the interchanges or the HIA interchanges work for Melbourne.
It did. But like you just said, the problem, people still don't realize you still run the risk because if he fails, like he did,
exactly,
he can't play this
week.
That's right.
You
still run the risk at the end of the day. That's just the way it is.
But that's obviously a risk some teams will be willing to take. It'll be like, oh, right. It also depends on the player that's being assessed for the HI. So if it's a winger or, like an 80-minute guy or one of your playmakers or something like that, boy, you're taking a chance by rolling the dice, having them to go off for 15 minutes, pass the HIA, come back on. The game could be gone by then. Or, do you know what I mean? Like if they let him stay on and then he is really concussed and then the NRL just comes down and they end up fining you anyway. So,
well, that's right.
It's treading a fine line. But if it's like a middle forward, then you can absolutely work it perfectly and get another one on and go, oh, yep, no, yeah, they pat their head and go, yep, that's a HIA. He's going to be sweet. He goes off and has his rest, and then it's not an interchange. And this then comes down to the interchange problem. And I say problem because that's why teams are doing this, because there's only 8 interchanges. And there's media types and football types that are out there that want to see the interchange come down to 6. That's crazy.
Yeah, no.
That
you
is
can't.
Absolutely crazy. In the last, what's it been, 8 years or so, the interchanges come down from 12 down to 10 down to 8. Like, it's too much. And with the speed of the game at the moment, it doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't
even with,
make
even
it
if, needs... you, if you had this sort of speed and you went back to 12 interchanges, I think fatigue would still
what?
be a huge factor.
I was gonna say I think 10's not sort of too bad, but then I like the idea of a fifth bench player. I've always liked the idea of 18.
Yeah, that's right, and that's for that unfortunate sort of situation that's going to come about if. If there's a three HIA fails.
No, but see, I don't know. I don't like that. I think it doesn't have to be three. You should have one or two, and you should have that person that can play up. There's nothing wrong with that. Because nine times
should,
out
of... I think the part of it that they should sort of bring in is if it's a HIA due to foul play, through no fault of your own. Do you know what I mean? If somebody's poleaxed somebody in the head or anything like that, do you know what I mean? Like if there's been a foul play... then yes, but if it's just in a normal tackle or a head clash or something like that, then you don't need it. That's just part of the game. That's football.
That's right. We'll move on to the games. The first Saturday game, the Manly Seagulls. I guarantee no one picked this. 36 blot to the Titans.
Dismal.
What the hell? Dismal. Literally.
Just they look like a bunch of reserve graders. I don't know what the hell happened.
I don't know what the hell happened. Like, I mean, there's not much to go through in this game, but it's just, I mean, Manly were great. Look, yes, Tom Trbojevic's first game back. I didn't think he would.
Is that it? Is that all it is? It's just the catalyst of Trbojevic.
I think it will. How good did he play? Maybe it was.
It was unreal.
Maybe it was because he clearly can defend. And again, this is no harp on Dylan Walker, but he clearly can defend better or game manage better at fullback compared to Dylan Walker. But maybe it is. I don't think. They had a chance to win. I don't think they were going to win like this. No chance in hell.
The Gold Coast were so far off the pace.
On everything.
It wasn't funny.
Everything. Their completion rate was terrible.
Just in every facet of the game, completion rate was horrendous. Like they ended up almost having, they ended up having more runs, but in this game, but the possession time was fairly even. Even though it was like 53%, 47%.
The errors in the completion rate, handling
errors, missed tackles, penalties. just fundamental stuff, man. And not being very expansive. Like I think that was part of their problem as well. Like I think because it was a little bit drizzly at Mudgee. So, but the thing is with that is Manly plays at the exact same football as the Gold Coast does. So there's no excuse. There's the rain, both teams playing it. So I just didn't think they were very expansive. They didn't really use their edges as much as what they were. They've got an absolute destruction machine in Fifita out on the left, and it was ineffective, and it was very poor by the Gold Coast to walk into that game who they would have been fairly fancied in winning that. And to just be blown off the park the way they were, Manly were terrific.
They were terrific. I guarantee no one fancied Manly in that. Not that any tipping comp I'm in, I didn't see one Manly pick. Not one Manly pick.
I see one.
So yeah, it's as easy as it probably was Tom Trbojevic because he started in the game. He nearly got the most run meters for them. He scored a try. He had line break assists.
Set up Jason Saab for another one.
There wasn't much to go with this guy. I don't want to go much. Just like, Titans are poor, and then Manly played well on the back of Tom, who I nearly gave to start of the week, but close. But anyway.
But see that was the thing. Like if it may have been a little bit more close, and he had made some sort of game winning plays. But he just tore the heart out of the Gold Coast many times, and they had no answer for him.
That one game has automatically shot him into Origin easily.
Oh, yes.
He probably was always there, but just how easy that just shot him in. Man, we're going to have a fullback problem.
Oh, fullback center, like,
well, there's only one fullback, you think, but then like fullback center winger, like my God.
That's right. There's going to be players playing out of position a little bit, so 100%, that'll come back.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, that talking about that next game then was the Rabbitohs getting over the Tigers 18-14.
Grief. Some of these games this week, man. Like this game was just off the hook. Like once again,
what the
a team that was happened? Extremely fancied. would have been very fancied in this game.
Yeah.
They were being outplayed by Wes in just about the same thing in just about every facet of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, and then Wes were there right until the 80th minute.
That's right, until full time. So,
Stadium Australia, like, there was only 16,000 there, but they were goddamn loud for 16,000. I mean, I only say only. That's a good crowd, but for Stadium Australia, it doesn't look like much. But they were for 16,000. They were very loud in that game.
That looks ridiculous. But, yeah, it looks like
a drop in the ocean. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But do you know what I mean? Like this game was just the upset was there. It was on the cards, and then
It was literally there.
That Latrell Mitchell, the run by Latrell Mitchell, out of the in goal, down the touchline, to get them out of trouble. Absolutely, but they were down 14-6.
Yeah,
and it absolutely sparked South into action.
Yeah.
And to just sort of just come home with a wet sail as an avalanche of points it ended up coming down to the Adam Reynolds 2-point field goal to tie everything up, so it sent us into golden point.
He had three attempts too, so he doesn't mind taking them when he wants to. Just on that 80th minute try, like, it wasn't so much like it was, I mean, it was exciting as, like, they said play on and then Luke Brooks ran 100 metres and scored and then they had to check everything. My thing was, why the hell was it so easy for Tom Burgess to run down the middle like that in the 80th minute? No one touched him until right at the end.
The Red Sea parted and he just went straight down the guts, and it's just like, I've seen the interview of it after. It's just like, oh, you know, that doesn't happen all that often where he gets into open space like that. That was insane.
In the 80th minute. In the 80th minute. I could not believe that they, like, yes, they played on and all good, and then they had to check everything, but my God, like,
with the way that it ended too, like, you know, it could have even ended in regulation. You know, Adam Reynolds sort of, he'd missed another shot at field goal. He missed a penalty goal for them to go ahead. Yeah. In the dying sort of minutes, you know, you had Willie Talau being sent off, or, you know, or sin binned for his little discretionary penalty towards the end of it. It just, like you said, it was just it was chaos.
The final 10 minutes was wild.
You just thought, oh, well, Burgess has crashed over. And then all of a sudden you see the camera pan away, the celebration, and it pans on to Luke Brooks, and he's at the 50-meter line. It's because, like, what the hell's he doing?
You heard what's he doing? The ref kept yelling, play on, play on. Play on.
It's just like, well, they're not. Surely he couldn't have dropped it over the line.
Well, he
plants it down up the other end, and you're like, this can't. This is the most bizarre way to finish. What a heartbreaker. Either way, you know, if Burgess had have dropped it and Brooks goes the other way.
The only way he's called that to play on is because he's thought he's knocked on. That's the only way he would have called that. That's the only way he could have called that.
He puts the ball down sort of sideways and it bounces up.
So he had to call it play on because he couldn't have done this because he would have decided.
If he thinks it's a no try, then he has to say that it's play on.
No, or he goes, he stops the clock and then goes no try. But he's clear.
But the play it was picked up. That's what I mean. It was picked up by Wes. So if he thinks that it's knocked on,
that's what I mean.
He can't just stop it there and then. It's knocked on in the end goal.
So what I'm saying is, I think he thinks the ref thought it was a clear cut knock on. Instead of going, oh, maybe it was a try, maybe it knocked on, I'll do this, and then do the no try. Yeah, but
there's no stoppage in play for him to do that.
But then, no, I just thought generally if they do a no try, they'll do that and they'll stop that to a no try.
They need a stoppage in play, like, you know, well, whether the stoppage. The ball's granted. There was no stoppage.
But then usually when a ball's...
But that's what I mean. He's thought that if, like you said, if it's a clear knock on,
which is then this play on. Yeah, that's what I mean. I think he's thought it's a clear knock on. I know that. He's just thought, well, it's a clear knock on, play on. So
that's right, play on. But, exactly. So you just let the play develop.
Yeah, correct.
Whatever
correct.
happens. So it's either a game. The game essentially finishes on that play, whether it's a try by Souths or whether it's play on, and then it's a try by Luke Brooks for the Tigers. The game ends there.
Yeah, it does. And it did, I mean, it did. Like, I just, the Tom Burgess, the parting of the Red Sea just did not make sense. It just was ridiculous.
Straight but, down the middle. We had no chance of stopping him.
No. Oh, no. Once he was in, like, that full bloody runaway freight train, no one was stopping him. So
you've got to get in front of it, but he was no way in front of it.
But yeah, you'd be shitting yourself. The next game was the Raiders going down to the Eels, 35-10, and another decent crowd up at GIA Stadium.
I think it was a bit of a shock.
Yeah, I thought
a bit of a shock scoreline, bit of a shock performance by the Raiders. I think they were well off the pace.
Ricky Stewart let him know.
Sticky Ricky didn't he pulled no punches, you know, especially with team selections and you know what he said, you know, during this week that yeah, there's guys running around out there and just because they're wearing a Canberra Raiders jumper that they think that they're first graders, so that's a bit that's a bit rough. But he's always been like that. He's always been, you know, a straight shooter. So it's Isaiah Papali'i is just, you know, we want to go on about buys of the season. He's definitely up there as a buy, you know, one of the buys of the season for the Eels.
I've been saying it every week how brilliant this guy is. I know it's only six rounds, but he is the buy of the season. I don't know what he's getting paid, but he's brilliant.
It was and it was a massive crowd. It was 20,000+ there at Canberra.
Yeah, all the crowds this week were pretty good, I thought. You know, considering I thought they were pretty good, so
the crowd up here is pretty ordinary, but anyway.
Well, yeah.
I just say it all the time. Sunday afternoons just don't work here in Townsville. They just don't work. We'll get to that when we get to the Cowboys game. This game just got off to the absolute worst possible start in, you know, the very first kick that was put up, you know, attacking kick by Moses. And it got a little big on Rapana. And He sort of misjudged it, went over his shoulder and then went out. And then, that's what I mean, within 2 minutes, the Parramatta have scored. So it just, it got off to a bit of a shock and start, and it just didn't really get a whole lot better for Canberra as the game went on.
No, it didn't. I'm just looking up Isaiah Papali'i's contract details and everything. Maybe, I think it's not even like close. I think that this is the buy of the season when you hear this. So he obviously was a New Zealand Warriors junior. Potential saw him earning up about, he got about 350 last year, and then New Zealand just had to sort of, they want to roll over and change, you know, some of the players they had there. He took a Parramatta deal of 2 year Parramatta deal for $150,000 a season.
Yeah.
His 2020 stats in 15 games was one try, 71 meters per game, 17 tackle busts. This year, six games, four tries, 134 metres per game, 22 tackle busts, four line breaks, four offloads. So, that is 150 grand. That they should be able to upgrade that like they usually do.
Bargain.
Bargain, literally. He is the buy of the year. That's 150 grand. No one will come close to a buy of the year.
Oh, yeah, that's it. That's such a good signing. Yeah. And you know, whether or not he's got a little bit of that, yeah, that chip on his shoulder, or you know, he wants to go out there and sort of earn his way and go, hey, look, you know, I've taken a pay cut to sort of come over to Australia how do you like me now? So exactly. So
yeah, they were poor, Canberra, but goddamn, they were poor.
And this is something that I picked up as well just throughout this game. They had a really sort of weird game plan in this one, like we'd sort of pointed out with Brisbane earlier, you know, with the Thursday game and Brisbane sort of, you know, essentially cutting off half the field in going to Brian To'o all that time and not having a kick at all to Charlie Staines. This game, I'd sort of noticed that Canberra were peppering Blake Ferguson's side of the field in attack. So that, you know, they come up with one try. I think Rapana sort of got one try over there, but I think they went to the well you know, maybe one too many times in sort of attacking, you know, with Rapinoe up against Ferguson. I think they sort of went to the well one too many times and or a couple too many times, you know, because they put Rapinoe into touch. He nearly got over, but he dropped it. So I just sort of see, especially in the first half, the way that that sort of game plan came about, they looked like that they were just going to go down Canberra's left-hand edge and really put a working on Ferguson, and he did well.
Ferguson or Rapana?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he
look,
did
he
do
had
well.
Plenty of help. He had plenty of help D as well, but in one-on-one situations, he was still good, and he was solid.
That game, but I mean, for me, just for Canberra's poor effort, it was there, and this is what Sticky was targeting at. Just their forward pack was poor. My God, they just didn't get many run meters.
And Parramatta's forward pack was terrific.
Terrific, correct.
Especially just, after being dominated as badly as what they were last week by St. George Illawarra. Like, they came out and responded big time. And to me, Canberra's got a forward pack not to be sneezed at. So for them to be able to sort of, especially in that second half, to sort of get a little bit of ascendancy and a bit of dominance over that Canberra forward pack was terrific. And Moses was excellent in this game as well.
Moses was excellent. We'll talk about him later with contracts and all that. Elliot Whitehead was the one that stood out. Like, 80 minutes and only did 7 runs for 42 meters. That's it.
Yeah, you can't have that.
And 18 tackles. So he didn't do hardly anything on that game. No, you can't. You
cannot have that.
Because I'm sure he's getting paid a pretty penny, you know, over from the UK. But
yeah,
good win by the Eels.
This was Parramatta's first win in the nation's capital since 2006.
And this is why I picked Canberra, because I thought that, you know, Canberra's team, the way, I mean, I'm probably not the only one, but you're right, yeah, because I thought from what you just said then, I didn't think the Parramatta, not that they didn't have the form, but I just didn't think they were winning Canberra, so
no.
Clearly that's not the case.
Especially after being dominated fairly, you know, fairly adequately last week against St. George Illawarra, they absolutely responded.
Well, talking about them, the next game was the Dragons are going down to the Warriors 20-14.
Didn't see this one coming.
No, I'd be surprised. I mean, I'm in some comps that people picked like 6 out of, was it 6 I think they picked? And I went, come on. They closed their eyes. I've seen as well pick 6.
And it's like, give me a break.
They
people.
Closed their eyes.
Six.
I guarantee get out they of here. But, I didn't see it coming at all. I was trying to work out in this game what went wrong for the Dragons, because what went right for the Warriors is they were completing the sets perfectly. They nearly got 100%.
24 for 24 in the first half and 40 of 41 in the second half.
Yeah.
Now, some will have you believe that obviously we have several groups of statisticians that go out there and do these games, whether they're Channel 9, whether they're the NRL, whether they're Fox Sports. Now, Fox Sports will have you believe that the Warriors went 40 for 40. I generally get 99.999% of my statistical information from the one source, and that's the NRL website. And the NRL website right here says 40 of 41, so not a perfect game.
Not a perfect game, but they're not a perfect game.
No, it was 24 for 24
said,
in the first half.
But they did have a perfect game. I mean, they just didn't pull on. I mean, they didn't take, and they won the game, but they probably could have taken more chances on, I thought, the Warriors, because they had.
I guess that comes down to sort of, you know, Brownie, I guess, sort of simplifying the game plan.
So. I think so.
I guess, you know, almost like we said, with what Newcastle kind of has to do is you can take the same model out of that for the Warriors. You know, you've got your X factor in Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. You've got sort of game managing halves. You know, you've got Sullivan there. You've got Nick.
He's going on me, Sullivan.
I think it's very comparable, the game plan to go out there. Don't drop the ball. Don't give away cheap possession. You know, complete your sets. Don't miss tackles. Put the pressure on the other way. And they did that perfectly.
Yeah, he's growing on me, Sean O'Sullivan. Not that I didn't like him at the start. I thought he was just a bit raw. But no, he is growing on me well. God damn, they're going to miss Tua Vasicek. That's going to be huge hole for the Warriors. I'm surprised, you know, with all the teams, and they'll lose him next. Is that next year they'll lose him?
Yep, Tua Vasicek's gone at the end of this year.
Which is, he'll be on a pretty penny. And I know he'll come back to the Warriors and all that. Why aren't they active?
He'll be back.
Of course he'll be back. But why aren't they active in the market? Surely that's going to be a big chunk. It's weird, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, they'll be – look, you know, they're always that kind of club where most of the time they try and get homegrown talent. So
yeah, but they can't. You know, and you think they'd have a fairly big sort of
– No, that's right. Like you've got to try and entice people to go over the ditch and play over there. And I think with – some of the systems I think that Brownie is putting in place, and having them play sort of this hard nose, hard edge type game, mistake free play, be solid in defense, hold your try line, don't let a lot of teams score a lot of points on you. I think it'll grow on people, and like you said, that's a massive loss for Tua Vasicek. And it'll be the Warriors tried to get Jerome Hughes to come over there on a big deal, and that would have been a perfect replacement.
Oh, 100%.
For Tua Vasicek. Obviously, he's not to the class and the caliber. They're both New Zealand. They're both Kiwi representatives.
Yeah. No, I agree.
It would have been a nice replacement to have.
100%. So they'll still. I mean, I'm sure they'll. They'll dip in sort of somewhere. Look,
they've got the young. They scored the young kid Walsh from Brisbane to go over there. So they're sort of touting him as the future.
Big raps on him apparently.
That's very raw talent.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And they might have to do that for a little bit. So, last game. Yeah. The Cowboys, beating the Bulldogs. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I thought the Bulldogs could probably win up this game up until the send off for Jack Hetherington.
Look, this game.
That game was suck.
That first half. Oh, that was hard to watch. That first half was horrid.
Because you didn't watch this live, did you? You sort of caught this a bit later. If I remember.
I watched the first half. I watched the first half live, so I watched the worst half live. Yeah. And then basically had to watch the second half replay. While I was I listened to, you know, 20 odd minutes of it in the car. On the way to work, so I was sort of getting a good sort of picture of the game and how North Queensland was sort of starting to work over Canterbury in the second half. But just the same old deal with the Cowboys not being able to hang on to the ball, still having fairly good field position, but just diabolical fifth tackle options again. That kept. Yeah, they kept the Bulldogs in the half and it being, you know, 6-6 at halftime, and it's just like, man, something's gotta give, and Todd Payton had come out and said basically, yeah, let's stick to our game plan. Let's try and be a little bit more direct and go up the middle a bit more. And you know, obviously hang on to the ball. But that was basically it. And it bared fruit. Pretty much straight away with Reece Robson scoring like 4 minutes into the second half, straight up the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought the biggest thing that they were doing in that first half, and then it sort of carried a little bit in the second, was just errors. They were so error-riddled, the Cowboys. It was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous, actually. Yeah, 15-8.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, they played very disciplined, and that shows on just 8-1 in the penalty count. And you're right, in the second half, Reece Robson going down the middle. I think even wasn't it might have been Mitch Dunn or Ben Condon. One of those tries was right down the middle too. So
the final try that Dunn scored was sort of on the edges, but yeah, she showed off some good footwork. But yeah, the Condon tried to me. They just went Cowboys just went sort of bang 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 in a 15-minute period and basically put the game. Just that little bit out of reach for Canterbury. But, yeah, like we said, the game came alive in the 55th minute.
It did come alive. I was messaging
and it came alive more so for the Bulldogs.
Yes, it did.
Like just a good like Vossi described on the game, a good old fashioned Hills hoist. Like it was that's a textbook beautiful clothesline that that any professional wrestling company would be very happy with that lovely clothesline that Hetherington put on Val Holmes.
I'm surprised Jake Hetherington didn't get any calls from any wrestling company after that. But
we could have made up one of those memes where it's like Jack Hetherington is all elite.
Probably could have. Look, it deserved the send off. I'm not going to lie. I thought. You know, there was a push and shove and all that, and you could sort of probably put the other ones on report. But I just want to get back to the Bulldogs thing you said. I'm surprised it sparked
Jack
them
Hetherington's
more.
All elite.
No, I'm surprised it's and you could see straight after that next 10 minutes, it sparked them more than the Cowboys.
Absolutely.
It was so weird to see. I went, what the hell?
Yeah.
What a Cowboys is just like went, oh, okay, no, sorry, we'll just back off a little bit now. They
well,
went the other
thing
way.
Was too is that they is Granville scored, you know, only a couple of minutes after the send off, and I think that they just took foot off the gas.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're a side like North Queensland and you're not in the greatest of form or anything of that, you absolutely cannot afford to take the foot off the gas.
No, but then I thought
what happened last week.
But then once Granville's try sort of happened, I thought they took the foot off the grass a little bit, but then they played a lot better like from that. You could just sort of the game sort of slowly slipping away.
It was 24-6 at that point.
Yeah,
so,
you could sort of see it slipping just, away.
Yeah. You played good, Granville. Everybody was on the wall, but that's what I mean. Canterbury coming, yeah, that's what I mean. There was one or two sets there where it was just absolutely whoever was making the charge up the field, we're running at 100 miles an hour to just charge into the line. It's like, holy crap. What are they doing?
And you know who had a really good game, and this is the way he needs to keep playing, and he ran like that every time, was Cohen Hess.
Look,
no, I know what you're going to say about Cohen Hess.
That's right. I've been a critic.
I know you have, but you can see in that
and
game.
We talked about this.
Yes, you can see in that game he only had 8 runs, but it was 94 decent run meters. He ran like he should run, like he was running fierce. But he also has that nice sort of swerve in his game where he can sort of break a tackle here and there. Like, he played good, I thought.
That's what Todd Payton's basically come in and said that's where he's going to play. He's a middle forward, and that's where
nothing
he's going
that.
To be for
I
the
think
foreseeable
that's fine.
Future.
I think that's fine.
I think they could be squeezing a little bit more juice out of a prize signing that they had, you know, a couple of years ago in Jordan McLean.
He's
been very, very disappointing.
He didn't play many minutes in that game, which is interesting.
No, he played like 35 minutes, which is that's just not good enough. Like that's
he can still get decent meters. I mean, he got 92 meters out of 8 runs, but I agree, he should be playing a lot more minutes. I like Lachlan Burr. I thought that was always an
issue. He's putting his hand up for a lot more work.
Yeah,
like the one I think that's what I mean. Burr playing it at lock was good.
Yeah,
they had good energy come off the bench. You know, Mitch Dunn, but Francis Molo, Big Frankie, he was massive off the bench.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, yeah. Oh, and they use the bench well. I thought honestly they use the bench well. Like Mitch Dunn was up. Yeah, their bench was pretty good compared to the actual forward pack. I thought they were really good off the bench. If you look at their actual forward pack, I mean, Jake Granville, like I said, had a pretty good game. So
Jakey's been in good form this year.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Reese has been pretty good too, but Jake, you know, I thought he might be not on the way out, but I thought he might start to plateau off. But
to his credit, I absolutely thought he was on the way out. But
yep.
I think Reese Robson sort of, you know, had a bit of a mediocre season for the hype put around him last year. But he needs to continue this on. But I think this is sort of the right way that they're going about it. And once again, I think Todd Payton sort of come out and said that there are game situations where he wants to play both of them on the field at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I think that's a good because I think he can sort of slot anywhere. Like he's got a pretty big upper body, Jake Granville. I think he can sort of slot anywhere in that forward pack, I think, personally. So...
Look, I think for Canterbury, like it's the same old story. Like, you know, we say, okay, granted they scored 18 points here, but you know, they're one of their biggest problems this year is scoring points, and I think that just basically comes down to being, you know, having a consistent halves pairing. Like, you know, you have a look at over to the last few years, that the amount of, you know, the amount of halfback 5-8 combinations that they've had, you know, they've had the two guys that they've got there now, Avarillo and Flanagan. You know, they've had Lewis in there. In previous years, they've had guys like Jack Cogger and Kieran Foran. They've even tried Jeremy Marshall King in the halves, and it hasn't worked. So I guess the future is bright in that regards, that they're going to have two young guys coming in there. Well, you know, they've got another young guy coming in there next year in Matt Burton. So that's sort of the building blocks for them for the future, but it still look like it's going to be a rough year for Canterbury. I argue that they were playing better at this time of the year last year than what they were this year. Have they even looked like they've been in any game this year?
No, probably this game. I thought they were in this game. You could definitely say they were in this game, but that's it. No, I agree. Yeah, I'd argue that they. Yeah, they're probably playing worse than last year. Well, they haven't won a game, so clearly they're playing worse than last year. So,
tough gig for Trent Barrett. Tough gig.
We'll move on to our studs and duds. I'll start with a stud. We both sort of mentioned Caelan Ponga, so we don't have to spend long on this one because we're smashing over the hour mark, but that's okay. The thing I wanted to ask you with Caelan Ponga, right? Is he, and I sort of thought this for an NBA player as well. So he's a very good player. So my question is he a very good player or is he a great player?
Time will tell.
Where do you see him as now?
His trajectory, the way that he's going to become a great player.
Great player. Okay. That's what I'm saying.
And the little injuries here and there. That's the only thing I think that's going to derail, you know, his chances of becoming a great player. You can see the traits that he's got, the footwork, the skill, the elusiveness.
Yeah.
It's all there for him to be a bona fide superstar.
Yeah, because of the
way I just hope that they don't sort of screw around with him too much in going, oh, well, if he can, you know, this is what he does at fullback. Imagine what he can do in the halves and stuff. I think that was the start of the Nathan Brown demise, where he sort of touted him as, oh, I want to put him in the halves. And it's like, no, he's too young. He's too young for that. He's a fullback. Like, maybe later on in his career, you know, a la Darren Lockyer or something like that, he can make the transition into a 5-8. But for what he is right now, what he can do for your side, he's absolutely a number one. So I think his trajectory is, look, it flatlined a little bit there. You know, the season that they had last year, he was hurt a bit. This year, you know, he started off the year hurt, but he's just hit the ground running to start this year, and two awesome performances. Even though the Newcastle were pretty bad last week against the Gold Coast, but he was very good.
I'd argue that he was could stay fullback forever. I don't think he needs to move to 5-8. I mean, I know he's got good kicking. I don't think he needs to move.
Stuff like that. No, absolutely not. He doesn't. It's, I mean, you don't need to. Oh well, if he can play here, he can play. What do you? What you say that? Or James Tedesco? Oh, could he make a transition into the half?
Billy Slater. No. Billy Slater didn't need to move, and he doesn't need to move. Yes, I think they think he can because he's got a good kicking game, Caelan Ponga, and that would be the only reason why, because the other two don't have a kicking game. But, I thought so. I think his trajectory, I think he's a very good player going to a great player. I thought the same thing. I think he's a very good player staying a very good player. Just, I mean, he's still 23. I just wanted to see, gauge what.
No, that's right. Oh, no, absolutely.
Just thought on that. Dud of the week. For me, it was collectively just the Gold Coast Titans. I'm sorry, I think it was pretty clear cut. They just, my God, like, you go from such a good win last week and you have a very good side and in a decent spot on the ladder to lose, you know.
They were in the top four.
Sorry?
They were in the top four.
Yeah, they were in the top four. Going to a side that's been playing pretty poor. Yes, they won their last two. But my God, not to that. Yeah, that was just a terrible loss. They didn't look like they reserve graders. It's the best way you put it. Yeah. Reserve graders.
They'll manhandle.
Yeah.
So I did have the Gold Coast, you know, down as an admirable mention for my dud of the week.
You did now, say you had a curly thing. Yeah.
Hear me out. All right. So. This week, so I have, you know, watch as much football and listen to as much football as humanly possible, right? So I heard two phrases this week that were very concerning to me. The guy that's on Fox Sports that does all the promos, Matt Noble, he does all the promos. Mm-hmm. I'm sick of seeing the promo for the boxing match with Jason Brown and Paul Gall. I'm sick of hearing about that. It's on right now. He does a lot of the promos for the football for Fox Sports. And then I also heard this phrase being brought up actually on the ABC radio. Now the two phrases that I'll give you were the one that was by Matt Noble was slobber knocker. Right? Don't say anything yet. The other phrase that I heard, I'm pretty sure it was by Andrew Moore on the ABC radio, was tougher than a $2 steak. Now, there is only one man who is allowed to say those two phrases. One man. And who do you think that man is?
That would be Jim Ross.
That would be correct. So those other two commentators, one's not a commentator, one's an actor. You get those phrases out of your mouths immediately. Get them out of your vocabulary because there is only one man on this planet that is allowed to say those words, and that is Jim Ross. End of rant. Dud of the week. Bam. Two duds
of the week. Okay, yeah, no, that's fair. Clearly, well, what if he came out as a huge wrestling fan? Any sympathy?
No.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to ask. We'll move on to the judiciary before we talk about the...
Come up with your own catchphrases.
Good point.
Hey, look, we don't do that either. We don't do that. We steal heaps of catchphrases.
Oh,
and
of course we do. Of course we do. Those
two phrases just happened to be within like 2 days of each other, and it was just my ears picked up.
Yeah, they triggered you big time.
Triggered.
So we don't usually mention judiciary, but we thought we'll mention it. I guess for the couple of there was three players, but we mentioned Momorowski before, but. The two big ones, Latrell Mitchell, will miss the next 4 weeks after they found him guilty of a dangerous contact against the Tigers. It was David Nofaluma, yeah. What do you think?
Look, I think he was very much hard done by with the amount of time that he's going to miss in 4 weeks, but that's due to loading and that's due to him not having the best record in the last 2 years. So he's had 5 charges in the last 2 years. So he was always going to have loading. So that only accounted basically for 1 week. It's like the defense sort of, you know, just watching NRL 360 and they sort of flapped on a little bit about it there. But the defense was extreme carelessness. And that's right. Extreme carelessness. He hit him in the chin. And while they want to go on to and say that, oh, he didn't have to go off for a HIA, he stayed on for the rest of the game. That's irrelevant. That's playing the results game. Because what happens if he did?
It's possible. The thing I wanted to talk about with him was in this game in particular was it was probably for that particular play probably didn't warrant 4 weeks, but you got the loading. No one's talking about the knee or the leg that he did to Luke Garner.
It was a mule kick.
No one's talking about that, and I thought that was worse than the head eye. Why are they
there
not?
There was absolute intent in that. And you know when that was? That was right after he made that 45-meter run out of the in goal, and he tiptoed along the sideline, and he threw the ball back in on the inside, was tackled. And it was a clear kick out. Now if he had kicked him in the face, that would have done some serious damage.
I just it.
There was 100% intent in that.
100%. He looked back. He can't tell me exactly. He looked back. So I just that annoyed me, and I probably didn't need 4 weeks for that, but that annoyed me that hasn't been talked about enough because they all have.
No, that's right. He has. He's been hit fairly hard with that one charge, but that's mean loading has caught up with him. So it's 4 weeks. Yeah. If he pled guilty, I think it would have been 3.
Yeah.
They were going into the judiciary to fight it to get a downgrade, and it didn't happen.
We both agreed that Victor Radley avoided suspension was pretty much what we both thought. That was pretty fair, I thought. Yeah, it was pretty. Yeah, it was downgraded. Careless. I love these fines keep coming out too. So they don't just get suspended or whatever. They do get fined.
Yeah, they get fines. Yeah.
Which is interesting, but that's part of the game.
That's the thing they're trying to do to stop, the suspensions happening for lesser grade one charges. So they'll just hit you with a fine.
Final thing we'll finish on is, I guess, player movement, but you could probably tail that into a halfback merry-go-round sort of. But, the first player movement for your club, the North Queensland Cowboys, was signing Chad Townsend to a 3-year, $2 million deal.
Yeah, they've paid overs for him. Absolutely no question about it. They paid overs for him.
Agreed.
When you're a struggling club, have a look at Canterbury. They're a struggling club. They've got to pay overs to get players to come to their club. That's just what it is. And you just got to hope that you hit on the player that comes up there and he plays well, and then you've also got to hope that you've got guys that are on lesser contracts or juniors that are coming through the club that are going to step up to the plate and play well before you have to upgrade their contract.
I agree that they paid overs, but then on the flip side, I love, and I think we both messaged about this, I love that Chad Towns is a game manager, which they sorely need.
Yeah.
He's 30 years old, but he's doesn't matter. He's a game manager.
That doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. No, I agree. But then I also I'm glad that they took him at 3 years for $2 million instead of taking Adam Reynolds for 3 years for $3 million and used the money in sorely needed other places. You could say overs, but I think that was a shrewd bit of business. It was a little bit over, but he was. I think I sent you a message.
What is he on five? What is he on five? 520 or 550?
550. So that'll put him at that'll be about 650 ish. Hey, 650.
That's a decent upgrade in the contract, and and Chad Townsend himself has come out and said, look, I just wanted to secure up my future. You got a little bit emotional, sort of telling the player group, but this is, looking at it on face value, I think this is a big win for the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. I've sort of said to you as well, I think this is the way to go rather than trying to get two super young halves at your club because they've been chasing Tom Dearden.
Well, that's the next thing we'll talk about.
I just don't know what sort of combination him and Drinkwater would be. I much, much prefer the combination of Drinkwater at 6. He's only 22. Drinkwater at 6, Townsend at 7. Yeah, you've got that game manager there, and he can kick too. I just think that's so much better for them.
So can Valentine Holmes, but he can kick too, Chad Townsend, and he's got a pretty decent kick on him too. So
that's right, yeah, exactly.
So they could use the money, and they're gonna need this all the other places they could use the money. So I thought it wasn't too bad. You did mention Dearden, so they have tabled a 3-year $1 million offer to him. And Drinkwater still hasn't got a contract yet. So
Drinkwater's expressed his expressed his interest to stay at the Cowboys. So I can only assume that there will be an upgrade in contract, and I think that would serve them better in keeping Drinkwater up there, because like I sort of mentioned to you, we talked about it, and I've put it in writing, I've typed this out, that if Dearden can't do a whole lot with a decent forward pack in front of him, and you can't tell me that the Broncos forward pack isn't decent, If he can't show you what he's made of and what he can do with that forward pack in front of him, then he's going to do nothing up here because our forward pack is just in disarray at the moment.
I don't know. They've signed Chad Townsend. Of everything, and I've seen him play here even, Tom did, and here in Mackay. Of everything I've seen of him, he's not a seven. He is a seven, and so is Chad Townsend. So he couldn't move to six. I don't think
he can move to second receiver. I just don't think so.
I agree, the pairing wouldn't work. The only way Chad Townsend have to move to six, but that doesn't make sense either. So I'm not all in on Scott Drinkwater yet, but I think I agree with you. I think that he'll be better with Chad Townsend than Dearden with Chad Townsend.
Yeah, I think so as well.
It's weird. Like, I mean, and they're not backing down, but I mean, he hasn't signed anything. He has expressed that he wants to stay with Brisbane. He's very expressed he wants to stay with Brisbane, but Brisbane needs to work out what they want to do because they're waiting basically. By the looks of it, all they're waiting for is what Tony Staggs is going to do. I mean, it has come out that Gold Coast have, I guess, pulled their offer, so they're in the box seat for him. I think they've got him on a 3-year, $2.8 million offer.
That was what the Gold Coast were going to throw out there at him. But the lure that's going to keep Tony Staggs at the Broncos is that. They want to put the number six jersey on him,
and he wants the number six.
Yeah.
So, if that's the case, Milford's gone, which is another name we'll have to talk about in a second.
Well,
so
I think he's as good as done.
Milford will be gone. Do they sign Dearden to a sort of cheaper deal and then so is Brody Croft. I know his name's not here, but he's. This is his second year of that 2-year contract he signed. So, do you stick with Dearden and have Dearden and Katoni Staggs there, and then sort of put the money elsewhere, or do you go and look for a half?
I think that's what they see as their future. Well, that's what they're looking at as their future.
Do they go and look for a Mitchell Moses who was touted up to be interested up there? Do they look for a half instead of
if they splash out the cash on Katoni Staggs, I don't see that they can even afford somebody like Mitchell Moses.
If I'm looking at the plethora of names here, Anthony Milford, Dearden, Sean Johnson, Matt Moylan, Scott Drinkwater, Ash Taylor, Corey Norman, Benji Marshall, Sam Walker. So they're all off contract at the end of the year. If I was Dearden, I'd be taking, these names, and I think we haven't mentioned, Adam Reynolds as well. That's the big fish
that everyone's after at the moment.
If I was Dearden, I'd be getting to sign somewhere quick because he could still get squeezed out everywhere if all these players get sort of taken up. I'm not saying he should sign up with Cowboys on that $1 million 3-year deal because I don't think it'll work, but he should take what Brisbane offer him and then sort of they can then sort of work out, put him with Katoni and then put money into other areas. Like fullback and that they might need to do, although they might have Xavier Coates there. So I don't know. I think Mitchell Moses is going to stay at Parramatta. I don't think that's going to change. And I think he wants to work out quick. He said he wants to work that out in the next month with what he's doing.
Apparently he wants to stay at Parramatta. So, that's not terrific that news is out there either. Like you want all possible suitors to think that they can absolutely pry him away from Parramatta, which will drive your price up. You don't want the information out there that's like, oh yeah, no, I absolutely want to be at Parramatta. That means that means you're going to drive the price down.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think if Reynolds, by the looks of it, is not going to stay at South, he's probably in the box seat to go to the Sharks because he wants to stay in Sydney.
He doesn't. He was in sort of talks with North Queensland and basically I think it was a thanks but no thanks kind of offer. It doesn't look like it will be the Broncos, even though they could probably offer him a little bit of cash. But like you said, with this Katoni Staggs contract sort of hanging over their head
as well. Xavier Coates as well. Well, he's still hasn't signed yet.
they're just not gonna, Brisbane probably not going to have the money to be able to throw at Adam Reynolds. So it's extremely likely that he's going to stay in Sydney. And yeah, that's, I mean, the logical sort of place could be he could go to Cronulla.
I think so. I mean, and then that sort of leaves, then what do you do with Sean Johnson? Matt Moreland, it'll be interesting where he goes. But
I think, out of that, I think Matt Moreland's the one that gets squeezed.
See, would he be an interesting, I mean, I know he's just following his mate, but would he be interesting up at North Queensland, Matt Moreland and Chad Townsend in a 6 and 7?
I mean, possibly, because that that combination for Cronulla this year has looked very good.
Because there's no way he's going to get the money that he thinks he's going to get anywhere else. He's kidding himself if he thinks that. Matt Moylan. I think he ended up joining at 800 grand.
I think so. He's somebody that's sort of plateaued, I think, a little bit in his career. Like you've seen the best out of him, but he just hasn't been able to replicate that. And obviously had a fairly injury riddled season last year. So, but this year has sort of been, I guess, that little bit of a resurgence of him that you're able to see what he can do with the ball in his hands. And yeah, absolutely. I think that, that halves combination between those two, between Moylan and Chad Townsend is working really well this year. He's only 29.
Yeah. Yeah. He is only 29. Yeah. I mean, of everything I've read, it looks like Todd Payton is he really wants to see the pairing of Tom Dearden and Chad Townsend for some reason. So I don't know what he's thinking, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
That's just me personally. I think that'd be a mistake.
He's 19 as well. Do you give a 19-year-old $300,000?
I would much rather put that money into Scott Drinkwater.
Do you spend $300,000 on a 19-year-old?
Yeah, that's rough.
I'm not saying, you know, and Sam Walker, what we mentioned, he has pretty much, you know, all but said that he'll basically take a pay cut to stay at the Roosters because he loves the way it is there. They've really looked after him. He should go beautifully with Luke Keary. He's going to be a very good player. Just the brief games we've seen.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah. Anything else you want to finish on before we wrap it up?
Look, I think that's pretty much it. Like, you know, we're talking about sort of a little bit of the player movement that's going around. We're going to have some guys playing in some different uniforms as we go around. You know, Danny Levi has been put into the Broncos squad. He's coming off the bench. So, you know, he's up there in Brisbane now. Will Chambers is playing for Cronulla. He's named in the squad this week, so that'll be interesting to see him in a Cronulla jersey if he gets the nod. And I'm not sure what, you know, obviously we've had Josh McGuire already make the move already down there to St. George Illawarra. And there's rumours swirling around that that Hastings, who's over in the Super League, is being targeted by the West Tigers to come back over.
Pretty hard too. So
yeah. And what does that mean for Luke Brooks? Because he's absolutely determined to stay at the West Tigers. He wants to stay there.
Luke Brooks, that's... What, doesn't he got another year? Has he got another year next year?
I think so. I think he's got one more year.
So he doesn't have to move technically, so...
No, not really, but yeah.
Wow. Yeah, he was okay before he left. I mean, there was personal things, wasn't there? Personal things there.
Yeah, I think he wasn't in the right headspace over here, and he's sort of, I guess he's away from that sort of stuff over there in the UK, and he's thriving over there.
Yeah, he is thriving. So yeah, it depends if you want to sort of leave that thing, but you know, if you're homesick, you're homesick. That's just the way that is.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Well, that'll do it this week for our NRL pod. Don't forget to follow us on our socials. As always, Twitter at Final Play Pod, Facebook's Final Play Podcast, where you'll get all our links to our podcast as well as Gimco, which is gimco.com.au, or Eureka Cards, depending on what you want to Google. It all comes up. So how'd you end up going before we finish on that NFL break?
Horrible.
Oh, really? Who did you get?
No, I got the Packers, and didn't get much, and got a pack. I went hitless. Got a pack of Absolute cards. There's some nice cards in there. I like Absolute as a product, but
you mentioned that. Yeah. Any big like
I've got a couple of common cards. Like I've got an Aaron Rodgers, an Aaron Jones. I've got a Brett Favre, Brett Favre like hollow insert, which isn't too bad. But yeah, didn't get any big hits in it. So
did anybody get any big hits?
Sorry.
Anybody else get any big hits?
I haven't seen the pictures of what actually came out of the break, so I'd have to go for a sniff back through and see if I don't know if Dom had posted anything up on Eureka Sports Cards on Facebook. Usually you'll put up all the hits and stuff like that of what everybody got, so I'd have to go fishing back through YouTube and find the break and actually watch it. I just didn't have enough time to be able to put in, you know, the hour or so to sit down and watch the break, unfortunately.
Well, hopefully someone got something good out of that break. Hopefully.
Oh yeah, there's
always inevitable, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that's right. When you got Mojo King and Dom on the breaks, it's always cash.
Well, that's because that's how I'll finish. Well, my name's Jason. I love watching them react on those breaks on YouTube. I watched a couple of them. It's hilarious. Smith. Oh, my God. It's hilarious. I think it was like when Zion hit or something like that. They just went ballistic.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's
absolutely. As you would. But, man, they just went ballistic.
When you get a Zion hit.
Shaking, putting it in there and had the gloves on. And as you would have the gloves on. Anybody was shaking and didn't want to, like...
It's definitely good entertainment watching that. So I guess for the week, Miles, get slobberknocker and $2 steak out of your vocabulary prompt, Plum. Yeah. Don't do it. Just don't do it.
Oh, you're so bitter. I love it. I love it. Have a good week, everyone.
It just picked my ears up. I'm just like no.
Hey, he might. WrestleMania week, he might have just been so into
it. That's
true,
that's true. They might have just been in the wrestling mood a little bit. Yeah, like you say,
Google the guy. He might be a full wrestling fan for all you know.
Possibly. Surely they've got to go back to one night next year, right?
Mm-mm. We'll talk about that later.
They can't keep doing this two nights. That's just extorting money.
Yes.
I understand that they're letting go a lot of talent and everything like that and think, you know, that they can't travel, and which absolutely they can 100% travel. That's ridiculous. You can't keep doing that. One night.
Have a good night.
4 hours. That's it. No more slobberknocker or $2 steak.
See ya.